It is my pleasure this afternoon. I'm your afternoon concert host. I'm Lori Neufeld, and hosting with me today is Maestro Robert Franz from the Windsor Symphony Orchestra, but here in town, you are known as the conductor for the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. So wonderful to have you back.
Thank you, Lori. It's such a pleasure to be with you.
And tonight you have a Pops concert, is that correct?
We do. So we're playing at the Westmark Hotel in the, I believe it's the Gold Room.
Yes, that's the Gold Room.
And it is a concert of epic tales, epic proportions. So all of the music on the concert is either comes from epic films, like things like Gone with the Wind, Jurassic Park, Lord of the Rings, Happy Feet. I know.
That's okay.
It's pretty
epic. Kids are going to love it.
Well, it's pretty epic for me. You know, you get this little penguin and he can dance. I'm like, that's an epic moment. Pirates of the Caribbean. But also we have five intensive opera singers. The opera singers who are here for the intensive this year, who are each singing an aria from some epic operatic tale like Marriage of Figaro or La Boheme. Johnny Skeeky. It's really a fun concert. It's super laid back. We just let our hair flow. Mine doesn't flow real far because it's really super tight to my head. But, you know, I try. I really sort of try. And it's just a chance for us to really just sort of have a blast. And
you know, can't quite do the Dudamel.
No, I can't do the Dudamel. I mean, I could, but it would take a couple of months to let the hair grow, and you know. But it's funny also to prepare this music because it's all music that most of the orchestra and I grew up with, and so the minute we pull out Jurassic Park and start playing it, you can see the faces light up of the musicians. We're like, oh right, when this movie came out, this was awesome. And you know what else I love? So for me, an epic film, an epic anything really, is something that sort of brings you into that world and doesn't let you sort of release from that world very easily. And so I know every time I see Lord of the Rings, it's for days afterwards that I'm sort of feeling like I'm in this sort of like other kind of land. And so the music has those sort of connotations as well. I think the music that we're playing is super evocative from these movies. And that's being sung, too, by the way. Chris Meerdink, one of the faculty members of the opera program, is going to be singing the folk song from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, so a little bit of something for everyone. And it's kind of cabaret style, so you can come, you can enjoy your libation of choice, sit at a table, a round table, and just sort of relax and enjoy.
Nice.
Right.
Yesterday, I had Jamie Mashler. She's the accordionist from Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra, from the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. And she spoke of just last season or a few seasons ago with the Seattle Symphony. They did a whole score for The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And she was in the Hobbit with the accordion.
Oh, how fun is that?
How neat is that? Yeah. And so we were just talking about Lord of the Rings and the score for that and how that has drawn in a bunch of people, and she said it was a really fun time to be on stage with the whole orchestra and the big screen behind them,
totally.
And the audience was just
just 9 minutes of the music, so it's not as much of a commitment quite as that. As the three films. Now, that would be an epic concert.
Wouldn't that?
Right? That'd be what about an 8-9-hour concert?
You'd have to train for
that. Yeah, you'd really have to sort of prepare yourself for that mentally, like physically, emotionally. Yes, no question.
We have queued up. We're gonna get into some of that movie music in a bit, but we have queued up some of the Beethoven.
Yes. So this is this last movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. This is arguably Beethoven wrote 9 symphonies. The Seventh Symphony is probably the sunniest, brightest, most sort of just open-hearted, generous spirit of all his music. And this last movement that we're going to play for you right now is really quite a romp. The reason I chose it is because during the festival, in addition to conducting the orchestra, I also lead a conducting workshop. And each year I have 3 or 4 students from the lower 48, mostly, who come to do an intensive workshop. We literally spend 12 to 14 hours a day pondering all sorts of conducting aspects, from the learning of the score to the technical hands to the philosophy and the psychology behind rehearsing an orchestra to actually rehearsing an orchestra, working with piano in master classes, a whole host of things. And it's really interesting, might I just say, that when you study something like conducting, which isn't actually making music, right? It's more the psychology and the philosophy of making music, that there's a lot more depth and conversation and exploration that is required than just being able to play something in tune and play it really beautifully. Not that my colleagues do that, but you know what I'm saying, is that there's something else to it, right? There's something about bringing everybody right. together. And so it's not like I don't just go into class the first day and say, okay, if you do these five things, you're going to become a great conductor and that's it. Each of these conducting fellows is on their own individualized journey to find within themselves the deepest, most profound music making possible. And then we work to unpeel the onion and to release all of these outer layers and find that inner artist, which, by the way, is the mission of the festival. Find that inner artist. And then my job is to help give voice to and shape to their abilities to express that inner artist. And so that process is a very, not only full-bodied process, but it's a really, can be a heart-wrenching, deep, really inner search in the soul of each of these conductors in a different way. For me, I feel humbled and a profound sense of gratitude to get to go on this journey with these conductors each summer. It's really a very interesting process. So the Beethoven we're going to play was actually not performed to this festival, but rather it was this theme of one of our master classes with piano playing this piece. And so each conductor conducted a different movement, and we worked through this symphony. There are some unique challenges to the technical side of the conductor, but also to the understanding of what it is that Beethoven was really trying to say and sort of bring out. And so that's where this Beethoven 7th Symphony comes from.
And we'll hear the final movement from the Beethoven's 7th Symphony. And this is Sir George Solti conducting.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Maestro Robert Franz joins me here on KUAC's Afternoon Concert, and he is again here to teach conductors to be conductors, or people who have always considered they might want to explore conducting to start exploring that conducting. And so, is it more than just making sure everybody comes in at the right time in the orchestra and the pacing and the quietness or the loudness? Is conducting more than that?
It's so much more, really. I mean, the thing is that the basic tools that we have are our gestures and our hands to show tempo, the speed of the music, how loud, how soft, that kind of thing, the basic shape. But there's so much more. There's a deeper, more profound process that the conductor has to go through to be able to stand on the podium and to inspire and evoke the music and bring it to life and bring really a group of however many musicians are in front of him or her along the way, and in a convincing way that everyone there feels like they're contributing 100%, and that they all feel like they own the performance of the piece. It's really a very interesting process, because it's, you know, I got into conducting years ago because I thought, oh, this will be great. I get to tell people what to do. I mean, that's what most, and by the way, every conductor is the exact same way. That's why we all do
They're power hungry.
A little. But then it doesn't take very long before you realize that telling people what to do doesn't get you the results that you want. Somehow creating an environment for people to be their best, most artistic, fullest self, that's really the goal. And that process is a very different process from just knowing a lot of things and spewing a lot of information. That's really goes to a whole different way of being, not only as a conductor, but as a person, right? I mean, you really have to be open and very receptive to other people. And you have to be selfless in a sense that you're creating an environment for these musicians to be able to fulfill their musical destiny, right? And as dramatic as that sounds, it really is the basis of what being a conductor is about. Because you think about it, you're playing in the orchestra. If the conductor doesn't allow you to do that, then you feel like you're kind of, okay, I'm like, you know, working in on the assembly line, just doing what I'm told to do. And, you know, these musicians are so, they're so well trained. They've thought through this music. They have experiences that they need to share. And it's a matter of bringing all of those things together.
That's so interesting from an audience member standpoint, because what we see in the performance is this polished piece with a conductor up there on the podium.
Yep.
And there's no, I mean, unless you go to the pre-concert lecture, you know, which some symphonies have, some don't.
Yep.
The Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra absolutely has that. Maestro Zilberkant does that before each one. But if you don't make it to that, what you see is the symphony orchestra is on the stage and the conductor walks out, everybody claps and everything starts, and
it just happens.
It looks in a way easy.
That's
and
exactly.
effortless.
Yep. Well, and if we're doing our job right, it will look easy and effortless.
Sure.
Exactly right. But that's
but
just the tip
so
of the iceberg.
Much that goes into that with, you know, before the performance, I'm sure that you have many practices. But like you said, these people are professionals.
Right.
They come with skills.
Yes.
And so it's not like you're there with a private lesson or a lesson for a group.
Right.
You are there with an idea. You are there with everybody's ideas and trying to congeal them into this beautiful
thing.
Well,
you have highly trained, highly thoughtful professionals in front of you. And it's not that my ideas are better. For sure, it's not that. It's that I have to convince them of the sincerity of my idea, and they have to come along and feel like they want to be a part of my journey. Because there are a lot of options, right? You could have four different conductors, four different complete understandings of the piece. And so, but as long as all four of those versions are authentic to the person who's conducting, then that's what brings a real authentic performance, a real live sort of event happening really on the stage. That's what's exciting. And that's not something that you learn overnight or you just sort of read in a book and you sort of do. So that's really, like I said before, that's the process that I've been going through with these conductors. And we really, you know, it's not easy. I strip them of everything they've done before and everything they knew.
Yeah.
And we start sort of building again from scratch.
So Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival has all these workshops, including one for budding conductors and conductors that would like to, you know,
Try it. Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yes.
Yep. I don't know of very many festivals that actually work on part of the arts.
That's right. And so one of the things that's so special about the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival is that no matter what level of music making you are at or art making, there is a class for you in some way, shape, or form. And we really pride ourselves on that, you know, for the intensives, we bring in a very intense view of it. For the novice, we bring sort of a very different aspect of it just to kind of see what it's like.
So when you sign up for your conducting class, do you get your homework? Do you know what piece in advance?
For the intensives, it's actually very competitive. We'll have a couple of dozen people from around the world, multiple countries, who will apply to come to Fairbanks, and they will send me videos and resumes, and I will go through those videos and I make a short list and invite them, usually in March. By April, once I've got everything lined up and know who I've got and I know what concerts they're going to be conducting, which are the first two concerts during week one of festival each year, then I choose repertoire for the conductors to learn, and I send them an email with a list of what they're assigned. So there are two sets of assignments. There's the orchestra-only pieces, which are their technically conducting pieces, but they also conduct. We have concerto soloists. So each of the registrants in the intensive string program get to play a movement of a concerto with the professional chamber orchestra during week one. And each of the conductors conducts at least one, but usually two or three of these registrants in their concerto movements. So they have a list. My conductors have a list of two main pieces to conduct, and then usually two, three, or four concerto movements to conduct that they have to learn beforehand and come prepared to festival, get started right away.
So, Maestro, is there certain conductors and symphonies that you like for those intensive registrants to listen to, or do you just want them to listen to those who move them?
It's a good question. We do talk about which conductors sort of had profound effects on us, and we do have that conversation, but it really is different for each of us. Each person sees a conductor in a different way and feels sort of like what they're doing in a different way. So that really varies. It's a really great question, but it really, really varies. So no, I don't have a specific idea in mind, although I will say, for instance, if I have a student who's working on a Mozart, let's say a symphony, we did Mozart's 15th symphony last week. I said to Tom beforehand, I said, Tom, you know, if you really want to understand phrasing, if you really want to understand what Mozart was trying to say, listen to his operas. Mm-hmm. His operas, because Mozart at his core is an opera composer, and even when he writes orchestrally, he's thinking vocally. And so so we used that as an example. So there was that. But yeah, we each have our own sort of inspirations for sure.
Do you remember the first symphony you ever went to as maybe a kid?
Yes.
And what were you drawn to at the symphony?
So it was interesting. The first professional experience that I had listening and watching was actually the Nutcracker. And
a lot of kids would
But for a different reason than you would think. So my elementary school music teacher, orchestra conductor, Will Alosher, who, by the way, just as an aside, was classmates with Catherine Hoffer, who's one of the guest artists here at the festival. Catherine is the concertmaster of the Anchorage Symphony. And so Catherine and Willa were classmates at Eastman, in Eastman School of Music. But anyway, so Willa said, you know, I'm going to take you guys to see the Nutcracker. So we went, the whole group of us went. And I remember during the break walking down to the side of the pit and peering over and just being mesmerized by seeing these folks just warming up and playing and just sort of doing their own thing, because obviously I couldn't see it during the Nutcracker. And I just remember, whoa, this is the coolest thing I have ever seen. It was kind of funny. It was also a group full of it was a house full of elementary school kids, and it was the first time for most of us that we'd seen guys in tights.
Oh,
and so
there's some giggles.
Well, there was a downright uproar when the first guy came out. The whole house just went crazy. It was the funny. I remember that to this day. But anyway, yes. So that was my first experience, and then
and you can imagine like the folks in the pit, the orchestra yes. in the pit hearing that yes. roar
and wondering what was
there.
Going on yeah. stage, because you never know, but you're in the pit, you can't see what's happening up there. You're like, did the mouse just fall over? What happened? The mouse, right?
Guys in tights.
Yeah. So that was one of my first experiences. And then Willa, who was an enormous influence in my life, enormous. She used to play in a symphony, a summer symphony along the Hudson River. And in the summer, she would take me with her. We'd go down to an amusement park for the day and then go see a concert that she'd play in. And everybody sat outside with their picnic blankets, but they played under the tent, and there were some seats under the tent. So mostly it would be me and about a half dozen other people who were sitting under the tent. And I would sit. I was this little 9-year-old kid. I would just sit by myself in the second row, all these empty seats around me, and have a full symphony orchestra in front of me performing. And it was really, really quite unbelievable. And I kind of think, I chuckle now because at the time it seemed super normal, but I'm sure that Willa and all her friends in the first violin section were looking out and she was like, that's my student who's sitting there so quietly and paying attention to everything right in the second row.
Yes.
It must have been hugely amusing for the musicians on stage. Because, you know, I've had that experience now, too, where I see a kid who's so involved in it and I'm like, whoa, that's awesome. But, you know, I was just like, this was profound stuff. This was, you know, I didn't grow up in a musical family. So when Willa sort of took me under her wing and said, hey, this is a whole new world, I was completely sold hook, line, and sinker. I knew I wanted to be a musician from the minute I played the cello the first day. I mean, I knew it. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience for sure. I for sure remember it.
That's a really wonderful story about your teacher taking you to the amusement park that ended in the concert. Grand finale yep. of the concert. And it's really yeah. wonderful imagery. When I was a kid, we had season tickets to the Wichita Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best seats of the house are kind of towards the middle of the yep. of the concert hall yep. and in the middle of everything. Well, we had the ones that were way up close
yes.
on the string side, yep. You know, where the violins were. And that, to me, was way better than having
yes, totally.
The mixed sound, because I felt like I was right there. And a lot of times that was the side that the guest artist was on also.
Yep. Yep.
And I was fascinated. I would play this game, pick out which instrument I wanted to listen to.
Yes.
And I was fascinated by that yeah. game that I just kind of made up in my head, sure. maybe. And, you know, people ask, you know, I was just asked this question today. What is your connection to classical music?
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first connection, was, you know, going as a family.
Yeah.
And thank goodness my parents did that for me,
yeah.
you know?
Well, I always love sitting in the front row. The front row are some of the cheaper seats, which
yes.
baffles me. In part, I guess it's because when you're in the front seat, you can't see everybody. And also, all the sounds don't blend in
That's
the
right.
same way.
That's right.
But for me, like every time in fact, when I very first started, every time I went to hear a major symphony orchestra, I'd always get a front row seat because I wanted to know what the sound was like up close, like, because I call it sizzle. On the violin sound, there's always this like little sound on top, this little sizzle. That's what makes the sound project out into the hall and what gives it its character, right? And so when you're sitting afar, it just sounds all aglow and everything's pristine and perfect. But when you're sitting up close, you can hear sort of this sizzle on the top of the sound. I love that, right? I'm all about the sizzle. And so I learned a lot by sitting in the front row and really yeah. observing what these orchestras were doing.
And if you want to hear, you know, the mix of sound that's just pristine, listening to great recordings is a
yes.
wonderful way
yep.
to do that.
Absolutely.
Also,
perfect.
You know, but yep. if you want to just be right there,
yep.
sitting up close
yep.
in the cheaper seats,
yes.
like you said, that's why we had those seats.
Well,
you know?
And speaking of, so the concert this weekend, Saturday, our final concert for the orchestra is Saturday night at Pioneer Park, and it's in the exhibition hall. So it's not in the small hall, but it's in the exhibition hall, which is a semi-round.
Yeah.
space, and people will be able to sit on the floor right in front of the orchestra or up in the balcony sort of around. So like there'll be the two options of places to sit. And undoubtedly upstairs will have a more glowing kind of feel to it. But if you're up, if you're interested in sort of like the nitty gritty kind of looking under the hood and seeing how the engine works, sitting downstairs in the front row, especially in a semi-round situation where you're kind of behind some of the musicians perhaps or whatever, really close to them, it could be a really, really interesting thing to do.
I love that idea. Mm-hmm. And especially if you have kids, you know, it makes them feel very much a part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and it's overwhelming, the quantity of sound. I think sometimes, you know, people are sort of surprised by how much sound there really is that comes from the stage.
With no amplification, of the instruments, but exactly the hall amplifies it.
That's exactly right.
And yeah, their instruments themselves amplify it. So amazing. Hey, let's listen to some of the Seahawk. Tell
let's
me about this.
Okay, so it used to be that back in the early 20th century, that being a classical composer and being a film composer were one in the same. You know, now we've more delineated, right? Like you've got Newman and John Williams and mm-hmm. James Horner. They just write basically film music. They don't write a lot of classical stage music. But when it first started, all the classical composers all wanted to be able to write for film because it was a new art form. It was a really cool thing. So there was a composer named Eric Korngold who, by the way, happened to be Jewish and came over to the States in the mid to late 30s to flee Nazi Germany. And he was a student of Richard Strauss, who wrote the big tone poems, Don Juan, Don Quixote, that kind of thing, right? Tilda Eulenspiegel. And his music is so not only complex, and I don't mean complex in like a difficult way to listen to it. It's very, very easy to listen to. You can just listen to it. The tunes are great. It's awesome. But it's so layered and it's so detailed and it's very, very interesting music and beautiful music and passionate music. And so he was big on the Errol Flynn movies, those swashbuckling movies. And so this movie was The Seahawk, is called The Seahawk. And the music that we're going to hear is the main title theme. And it's really, we're playing it tonight at the Westmark Hotel as part of our Epic Tales and part of our film score. And the musicians and I had a blast putting this piece together for you guys. I mean, it was really, really fun stuff to put together.
And so here's that Korngold Seahawk, and it's the opening or the finale?
It's the main title, this is.
Main title.
And that's Korngold, just in case you're wondering, with a K, mm-hmm. not a C.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're tuned to a very special afternoon concert during the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. Maestro Robert France joins me here at the KUAC studios. I'm your host. I'm Lori Neufeld, and we were listening to that wonderful opening Seahawk.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the Seahawk in the movie? Because that is a
It's a ship, I think.
Okay,
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
that
ship.
Makes sense. And so that makes sense with the wide open spaces
exactly.
and the waters
yes,
in front of you,
exactly.
and your future is
and Errol Flynn just doing
out
his
there.
Thing.
Yes. Yeah, and
music of Eric Korngold.
Eric Korngold with a K.
Yes.
They used to have silent films scored
Correct.
With a live orchestra
yes.
on stage
yep.
at the theater, right?
Yep. That's true. Although more often than not, it was an organist or a pianist.
Okay.
But yes, there, for sure, there are lots of times when you'd have a live orchestra. Yeah, you know, they just, it's different now. Like there's a grandeur to this music that is very... I don't want to say it's not there because obviously, you know, you hear the music to Lord of the Rings or the Star Wars sequel or whatever.
Who doesn't love the music to Star Wars
well,
and feel
plus,
very grand with
right,
it?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's such a largeness to it, but there's something about these old golden age of film scores. Korngold was one of them for sure. Max Steiner, you know, with Gone with the Wind. We're doing Tara's theme from Gone with the Wind on this concert tonight, which I just think is it's just so... Like the scope of it is just so, well, right? It's just so iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing some more modern movies like Lord of the Rings and Jurassic Park and music from Pirates of the Caribbean. And then we're doing music from Happy Feet. Little Caribbean
oh,
sort of like thing
so
going on.
Yeah.
It's really super. Mumbo, he's so awesome. Poor little guy, can't swim, can't fly, but he can dance his pants off, that kid.
Right?
Let me just tell you, he can dance.
And so I'm sure there's many parents in
yes.
the orchestra that you have there with the Fairbanks Summer Arts Fest.
Yes. They're
and
in
they
the,
recognize that.
They're in the middle age. So
yeah.
it's kind of funny. I asked the other day if anybody's seen the movie, and there were a couple of grandparents who'd seen it with their grandkids and a couple of young ones who had seen it with their young children. But most of them were in that middle zone where they... had not yet experienced Happy Feet in its full Technicolor glory. But you know what? I think we might inspire one or two of them to watch Happy Feet. You know, it's funny with my girl. So my youngest is 12. And the other day I said to her, I said, hey, you know what? I've never seen Angry Birds. I'm totally all about playing the game. I should see the movie. And so she and I sat down and watched the full Angry Birds movie, which is, by the way, a really stupid movie.
Does it have any good music in it? Or is
no.
it mostly electronic
not
synthesizer?
Great. But yeah. It was kind of fun getting to know the personality of my birds. I know, right?
That's
like,
great.
It's, you know, I have one vice. It's Angry Birds,
mm-hmm.
too. That's my only vice. I have no other vices. Isn't that incredible?
That
to be
is,
viceless. Can you imagine such a life? Viceless.
Music is one of them, or no? It's not a vice. It's
oh,
a, it's
I wish
art.
I were. I wish I was viceless. Can you imagine?
Yeah, right. So, how many are in your conducting intensive?
Three this year. So I have three
okay.
fellows.
Mm-hmm.
One is a student, a doctoral student at the University of Toronto. One's soon to be a master's degree student at the New England Conservatory. And one is soon to be a doctoral student at University of Texas, North Texas, UNT.
And these students mm-hmm. are going on to be conductors
oh, yeah,
in
sure.
their lives.
They've all been studying yeah. conducting. So they're all well-trained and very accomplished musicians in their own right. Our Toronto student is an incredible pianist. Daniel from Texas is a clarinetist. And Tom, who's getting ready to go to New England Conservatory, actually subbed in the Chicago Symphony over 100 times as a trombonist.
Huh.
I mean, it's kind of a big deal, Chicago Symphony.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like,
that is a huge deal.
So
we heard from the Chicago Symphony
right,
earlier.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly. He's not we in that recording, but yes.
No, this is an yes. older recording.
But yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're talented musicians.
Yeah.
So to be a conductor, the first thing you need is to be able to play an instrument well. Not all of the instruments. People ask me that all the time.
Yeah.
You don't have to play all of them because that would take, you know, 8 lifetimes to learn how to play
and
all
you're
the
a
instruments
cellist.
Well, I started in cello. I switched 3 years into oboe. So I'm really an oboist. So I was a professional oboist before I became a conductor. But it's really important as a professional conductor of a professional orchestra, that you have to know how all the instruments work, but you don't have to be able to play them.
Right.
But you have to know how to play one instrument really well. You have to be able to make music at a very high level in order to be able to transfer that to other musicians.
Yeah. Do you ever have vocalists as conductors?
Time. Oh.
So, you know, they haven't necessarily played an instrument, but just vocalists.
Yes, for sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Pianist, vocalist, you know, any instrument, yeah. any their voice, whatever. Yes, absolutely. That's possible.
Is there any one section that more conductors come out of than others? Like more violinists?
And actually probably less violinists than you would imagine. I know very few violinist conductors, but they're more like, I don't think so. Maybe I should do a survey.
Because violins are in a sea of violins.
Yeah.
You know, if you're an oboist, you're like one or two of you over
there.
That's
right. But there are a surprisingly large amount of oboists who are conductors, who turn into conductors, actually.
Right, because they think, oh,
I could do this.
If I could, yes.
I know, right. If I could just be in charge.
I know I can be up there. And I am not in a sea of oboes, yes. And I'm one step away from up there.
That's right. Maybe you're on to something, Lori. Maybe you have figured me out. Congratulations.
That's why you moved from cello to oboe also, because you just didn't want to be in the sea of the stringed instruments.
You know, actually, it's funny. No, it was because we moved locations. So I grew up in upstate New York, and when I was 11, we moved to North Carolina. And when we moved to North Carolina, the school system that my parents put me in didn't have strings, just winds and brass, right? Wind bands. And so... So my parents had just bought me a cello, and so they said, we're not buying you another instrument. So I went to the band director, and I said, hey, do you have anything I can play? He goes, yeah, I got this old oboe in the corner that nobody else wants to play. And
yeah,
that's
I'll
how I
take
became
that.
An oboe. So yeah, exactly.
So my parents aren't going to buy me anything. So
yeah, right?
I'll take
yeah,
that.
Exactly. What do you got? So that's what he had. So that's what I played.
So it is helpful that you are familiar with a stringed instrument.
Yes, of course.
And then can play one of the woodwinds.
Well, and in my bachelor's degree is in oboe performance, but my master's degree is in conducting. Right. And for that master's degree, among many different kinds of classes I had to take, I did have to take string lessons. So I took viola lessons for 2 years so that I would learn alto clef, which is the clef that violas read, and also how the bow works and how the instruments work. Uh-huh. So I played a very, very elementary level, the viola.
I'm a fan of the lower strings.
Yeah.
I do love the double bass and the cello and the viola. And
I like the sound a lot as well.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It turns out the viola is really one of the most important instruments in the orchestra for the sound of the orchestra. So, you know, you can have the most beautiful first violins. You can have a really strong foundation, but if the middle doesn't fill out the sound, then the orchestra will sound kind of hollow and a little bit tinny, a little bit brighter. And so it's really the viola expressive quality that brings the expression to the full orchestra. And it's interesting. I mean, that's my philosophy. Not every conductor feels the same way, but that's how I feel. And so I do my best always to encourage the most expressive, passionate playing I can out of the violas. And then it emanates throughout the orchestra in a most profound and interesting way.
And they just happen to sit in the middle also. That's
they
helpful.
Do. Yes, they do. Although I usually put them on the outside.
You do?
I do. Huh. I'm a big viola fan. I'm telling you, like right on the outside. Not on the left, but on the right. I mean, you can't take the seats from the first violins. Like that would never happen.
There would be a revolution.
Pandemonium would set in. No, can't do that. No. But cellos and violas sometimes get switched, and I like them switched. I also like that because then the cello sound comes out from the middle of the orchestra. Now, having said all of that as authoritatively as I did, I will tell you that the violas will not be on the outside for this concert.
Okay. Okay.
So, but that was really a logistics issue more than a sound issue.
And that one is tonight at the Westmark
at 8
o'clock. Yeah.
Yep.
Downtown Fairbanks.
Yeah. Totally fun. Mm-hmm. Cabaret style. Sit at the table. Have a libation.
Yeah.
Glass of water. Cup of lemonade.
What devices?
That's right. Whatever your specific is. Yeah. You know, it's funny. So we were talking about yesterday in the Mahler that we're working on with the registrants. This is for Saturday night. There's a movement in it that's a Ländler, which isn't like an Austrian dance, like a real peasant dance. And one of the musicians said, you know, I this is like drinking a great stout beer. And of course, we have all these high school kids in the orchestra. And so the other one says, no, it's more like German sausage. And I said, that's right, with a nice cup of lemonade. That's it. German sausage with a lemonade. Perfect.
So you have all ages in your orchestra.
Right. So, yes. So the intensive string program, which is led by Brian Hall, who's the violin professor yes. here at the university, and Maureen Hefflinger, which is a violist who grew up here in Fairbanks. So she lives in Boston now. The two of them sort of manage these 10 to 12 students from not only Fairbanks, some from Anchorage, but also a good quantity from the lower 48. And they come and they have these students do a couple of things. First of all, they play each play a movement of a concerto. Secondly, they play chamber music with the guest artist, that's to say without conductor, side by side. And then they do a side by side concert with us, which is our Saturday night end of festival orchestra concert.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, that's one of my favorite things about this festival is the idea of professionals and students working side by side. They learn so much so quickly, and they always, always, always exceed whatever sort of expectation they had for themselves. And I love that. I love watching that process unfold.
So your conductors that you have training with you, they'll be on stage on Saturday.
So on Saturday, they will not be on stage. Well, one of them. One of them is playing Tam Tam. So they also double as extra percussionists as needed. And so they're all playing in the Pops concert tonight. And then on Saturday, one of them will play Tam Tam in Mahler 4. But the others two will be in the audience listening to the concert. Their concerts that they conducted were last week, last Thursday and Saturday.
Gotcha.
So they each split those two concerts.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Mahler Fourth, we've got that all lined up to go. And were we going to listen to a couple of movements?
Yeah. Do you want to start with the fourth movement? Could we do that?
Yes.
Do you think? So this is Mahler wrote nine symphonies. He started a tenth, but he didn't end up finishing it. And each of them deals with sort of a different subject, but usually something rather celestial and sort of spiritual. I mean, Mahler was a real spiritualist. You know, he converted to Catholicism. He was having he was Jewish, and he couldn't get a job at the Vienna Opera, and he converted and got the job, and et cetera, et cetera. And so there was a certain aspect of his life that was tumultuous a bit in terms of his religious and spiritual sense and trying to sort of figure it all out. So one of the ways that he kind of worked through these issues, I think, a bit was through his writing, through his symphonies. And he wrote, in addition to symphonies, songs for voice and orchestra. And he wrote these series of songs from called the Knaben Wunderhorn, the children's wonder horn, right? And they're all sort of viewpoints of children. And this song, the last movement of the symphony, is one of those songs. It's called Heavenly Life, and it's a child's view of what heaven is. So he took that song and he dissected it, took bits and pieces of it, and created three other movements that lead into that song. But the symphony ends with a song, a child's song. It's sung by Janelle Soler, who, of course, is the vocal professor here at the University of Alaska, yeah. Fairbanks. And I'll read you the English translation. It's sung in German, but it's English translation. And it's super funny to think of this as a child's view of what heaven is like, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, we enjoy the heavenly delights. Therefore, do we shun the earthly. No worldly tumult is heard in heaven. All live in balmiest peace. We lead an angelic life. But we are quite merry at the same time. We dance and skip. We frisk and sing. St. Peter in heaven looks on. Verse 2. John lets out the little lamb. The butcher Herod lies in wait for it. We lead a patient, innocent, patient, darling little lamb to its death. St. Luke slaughters the ox without any hesitation or concern. The wine costs not a penny in the heavenly cellar. The angels bake the bread. Isn't that funny? Verse 3. Good vegetables are of every kind grow in the heavenly garden. Good asparagus. Now, how often do you come into an orchestra concert and hear the singer sing asparagus, right? Spargel. Good asparagus, beans, and whatever
Spargel,
we may desire.
That's the German.
Yes, that's right, Spargel. Whole tureens full are prepared for us. Good apples, good pears, and good grapes. The gardeners make room for everything. If you want deer or hare, they come running to you along the open road. Should a fast day perchance arrive, all the fish swim by at once gladly. There runs St. Peter already with net and with bait in the heavenly fish pond. St. Martha must be the cook. Final verse. There is truly no music on earth with which ours can be compared. 11,000 maidens venture to dance. Saint Ursula herself laughs to see it. Now, Saint Ursula laughing is a real that's not normal, right? She's the one who was shot, her and the 11,000 virgins. They were all just arrow with the Huns. They were just all killed. So Saint Ursula even laughs at it. That's how humorous it is. Okay. If you can get Saint Ursula to laugh, you know you're doing something. There is truly no music on earth with which ours can be compared. Cecilia and her relatives are excellent court musicians. The angel voices enliven the senses so that everyone awakes for joy. And so this is the final movement of the Symphony Number 4 by Mahler.
And that's next here on Afternoon Concert on KUAC. Mahler's Fourth Symphony, as the children have gone to heaven and found just these this wonderful life of where you...
Plenty of food, plenty of everything, plenty of sun, plenty of fishing, plenty of everything, just playing in the fields. It's a very bucolic... And it's sort of timely in a sense, you know, of its time. You know, you can imagine children being like hungry or, you know, not having everything that they need. And so in their heavenly life, in their version of heavenly life, they have everything that they need in just plentiful.
Maestro Robert France from the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival joins me here on KUAC 89.9 FM Fairbanks. I'm your host. I'm Lori Neufeld, and we are hosting Afternoon Concert today. And we just heard the Mahler's Fourth, and that's going to be performed tonight.
Saturday night.
Yes.
At Pioneer Park in the Exhibition Hall.
Yeah.
And
where the mural is.
That's right. Yes. And we're set up right in front of the mural, and everybody will be set up in the round on the floor and up in the balcony. And then singing that song, that last movement of the Mahler, which is actually originally a song, will be Janelle Soler from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And I love Janelle. Janelle is just like, she's like the cat's meow. She's such an incredible musician. She's such a down-to-earth, sweet human being. I just adore her in every way. And to hear her sing Mahler is a real treat. I mean, it's really special. She's a special artist for sure.
Every time she's been here for Alaska Live, I have always looked forward to it and had the hugest smile and warm feeling.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, when she's here and after she's left, it just it's a lasting effect.
It's true. Yeah. Now, the other movement we're going to hear is the second movement.
Uh-huh.
And so each movement has kind of a theme towards this heavenly life. So the second movement is actually... Gustav Mahler himself called it a dance of death. Friend death is striking up the dance. And so it's like a...
it's not the death of you're scared.
No.
Friend
this is like,
death.
This is, yeah, yes. Although you're being sort of seduced by death, who is the solo violinist. So the principal concertmaster, Catherine Eberle, who's our concertmaster for this concert, will be playing a solo. But now she's playing on a second violin. And the reason she's playing on a different violin is because it's tuned differently than a normal violin would be tuned to. So it's called scorditura, and everything is tuned up a whole step. Each string is tuned up a whole step. So what that does is it makes the violin have a sort of a more intense, a little bit brusque kind of sound, and the devil is often depicted as a violinist, as a fiddler.
I was going to say the violinists always get.
But that's the idea. So that's what Mahler was going after. It was like this idea. And so if you think of another great example of the scorditura violin, exact same thing is Saint-Saëns Dance Macabre, which most people know. And this movement, in fact, was inspired by that Saint-Saëns piece. Mahler was inspired by that, but it's. It's really fun, but it's a Ländler. So a Ländler is a dance, an Austrian dance in three that is a little bit faster than a waltz, but slower than, say, like maybe a scherzo or something. It's kind of in the middle. And if you would imagine like one of those little Swiss or Austrian outfits of the shorts and the like the big high socks and the little, you know, the little, I forget what they call them, but you know what I mean. So if you'd remember, you think of that with a little hat on.
Little lederhosen.
Yeah, the lederhosen. Exactly. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I knew it would come out.
And little girls are in dirndls.
That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what this music is supposed to sort of be imitating, is this idea of a Ländler. But it's a devil's dance. So it has the solo violin playing this sort of a little bit crazy music, a little bit like the music's a little bit more intense and agitated. And it's really, really fun. Now, it kind of goes back and forth. So you'll hear that kind of music three times. And in between those three times, in between times one and two and three, there's something that's a little bit softer and a little bit more peaceful, sort of a balance for that. We call that scherzo and trio, scherzo, trio two, scherzo. That's kind of the model of what this is based on. But it is, it's dance of death, and it's quite evocative.
So we listen for Friend Death in that second fiddle that's been tuned up a whole step.
Correct.
Okay.
And so you'll hear it. It sounds, for lack of a better word, it sounds a little bit scratchier.
Okay. Let's listen for that in the second movement of Mahler's Fourth.
Thank you. Thank you.
like the setup on the movement number 2 from Mahler's Fourth Symphony. Robert Franz is here from the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, and the setup on that one was that that violin, the solo violin in there, was Friend Death.
Yes, Dance of Death. It's the whole movement is a Dance of Death, exactly. And the friend is the violin. It's kind of the devil, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's really, I think it's super evocative, kind of fun stuff. It's very characterful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing you can say, I think, about Mahler, is he was really able to, in music, really capture these different characters. It's really fun.
And he did that oftentimes with the different instruments, but sometimes the last movement of some of the Mahler symphonies
has voice.
Has voice,
yep.
Whether it's a whole chorus,
yep,
or a soloist.
Yep.
And but then the other 3 or 4 movements don't have the
That's
vocals.
Right. So he wrote 9 symphonies, and symphonies 2, 3, 4, and 8, mm-hmm, all have chorus and or soloists.
Only in the last movement, though.
Correct. I believe that's correct. The third might have it in 2 movements. I forget, but there are a number of movements in that symphony. But yes, and so from time to time he did, you know, incorporate. He never wrote like major choral works like some composers, but his symphonies definitely have choral components. But, you know, for instance, the second symphony, which we're not doing, but the second symphony, the Resurrection Symphony, is 1.5 hours long, and the chorus sings the last 10 minutes. So there's 1 hour and 20 minutes of music for the orchestra alone.
This symphony, the chorus have to sit up there the whole time?
Yes, usually. Yep, yep, uh-huh. Yeah. So this symphony, I know, right? This symphony, just go to the restroom before you get on stage.
Yes.
This symphony that we're going to play on Saturday night here in Fairbanks is only 50 minutes long. It's the shortest of the Mahler symphonies
as
well.
And you're playing it in its entirety.
Yes, absolutely. So it's 4 movements. And so the first movement sort of depicts life here on earth. The second movement is this devil's dance. The third movement is a beautiful song without words. And the fourth movement is heavenly life, the one that we heard with voice and with Janelle Soler singing.
Yeah. And that concert is the one that's at Pioneer Park in the Exhibition Hall. And
Saturday night, 8 o'clock.
And I know that we have a ticket giveaway to do. Ooh. And we'll do that during performance today, this next hour. So be listening, because those are quite popular ticket giveaways to all these Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival concerts. And there's so much going on. And there's, you know, the free Lunch Bites concerts that go on all over town. And
this festival is extraordinary in that way. There are
really
so
is.
Many artists. I think this year there's just something around 800 artists, registrants who are here studying, and something like over 100, maybe 120 guest artists that are here. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a scale that is really quite phenomenal. And, you know, on so many different levels. I mean, we mentioned it before, but really the festival is for everyone. So no matter what level you are, no matter what you're interested in, there's really something for everyone. If you know, if you're curious and want to find out and want to try something, it's really a fun place to be. This is my 8th summer here, and I love it. I look forward to coming up to Fairbanks every single summer.
I just took a class from a chef from Chicago, and he had never taught a cooking class before, and he was great.
Ah.
I mean, it was just great to work with, and he was...
What did you make?
We made shepherd's pie, some sautéed greens, and some refrigerator pickles, but used some refrigerator onions in the shepherd's pie, and it was just great. And I picked up some details that I cook a lot at home, but just studying with a chef just for, you know, a morning can really, you can pick up some
Change
details
things,
that you're like, oh, yes, okay.
If I wasn't teaching, I'd be there too, my friend, I'm telling you.
You can get a little bit of everything here at the Summer Arts Festival. KUAC is sponsored, supported by the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, taking place today through July 30th. Performance schedules are available at 474-8869 and fsaf.org. And I'm sure there's still some workshops that, if they're one-day workshops, you can check if there's still availability, some of those too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How fun is that?
fsaf.org.
It's true.
Just saying that.
Yes. Yes.
Just thought I'd throw that out there, Lori. Just throwing that out there.
Because you can find out about all the performance schedules there.
And as well, yes.
They've done such a nice job of posting the performance schedules on KUAC, too, because we have an Alaska Live going on tomorrow with the Norwegian musicians tomorrow at 1. And they've posted all those there on their event list, too. So it's very neat.
Really fun.
Yeah. Last year at this time, you were here with composer Emerson Eads.
Correct.
And he's our very own Fairbanks favorite. Mm-hmm. And he's gone on to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And he composed the Mass for the Oppressed. Mm-hmm. And last year, Maestro Franz, you were here conducting
that,
correct?
That's correct, yes. The world premiere of it last summer.
Mm-hmm. And he wrote this in, he was so affected by the Fairbanks Four and their incarceration, and they were incarcerated for almost 2 decades. Mm-hmm. And because of the Alaska Innocence Project and work with Brian O'Donohue and many others, they were let out of prison. Mm-hmm. And what an amazing thing that's been, that they have been at a lot of these premieres too. Some of the Fairbanks Four have been there mm-hmm. with their families and with supporters and with music lovers. And it's just been an outpouring of emotion and support. And
well, the love that you could tell in the hall last year when they were there at the premiere of this piece was really extraordinary. I mean, for those of us who are quote unquote outsiders coming in to see this and hearing the story and finding out more about the history of this rather dark moment, I think in many ways, was really profound to see the love and the respect and the openness with which the audience reacted to these folks.
And Emerson did another rendition of this at Notre Dame, and they filmed it and recorded it.
And we're here on Movement Now, yes.
We are, and the filming of that was shown on KUAC television, I think just last month, and he put out a really wonderful recording.
Yes, it's incredible.
And the CD of this, so...
The movement that I chose is the Credo movement, which is at the center of the Mass, which, by the way, is at the center of every Mass, the I believe statement, right? It's the what you believe in. And while the whole piece itself is really profound and really sort of seeks answers, this movement in particular struck me last year and strikes me when I hear it, because rather than I believe Credo, it's I wish to believe. And I think there's something in that that is so earnest and so heartfelt and so evocative that Emerson wrote, that I think it's really an extraordinary testimony to his faith, to the faith of these guys, to the sense of justice and righteousness in our society. And it's really, for me, it's the sort of centerpiece nugget, the core of what this piece is really about.
And we'll hear that, the Credo, I Wish to Believe, from Emerson Eads' Mass for the Oppressed.
Oh, God. Thank you.
The credo, I wish to believe, from Mass for the Oppressed, from Emerson Eads, a blast from last year's past of Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival. Meister Franz, what was it like conducting the premiere of that Emerson had composed?
You know, there's something really special about bringing a piece of music to life for the first time, bringing it into the light of day, into a concert hall, and seeing the reaction of the composer as he hears his piece for the first time performed live, and as it starts to sort of pull together. So that in and of itself is a moving experience. But, you know, Emerson had such a deep and profound connection to this piece and to the inspiration behind the Fairbanks Four, that it was really moving to be a part of that cathartic process for him, for the Four in a sense, and for the community in a sense. And I think that that was really the genius of this piece. It wasn't just that it was well written, but that he tapped into a universal feeling for the community that really many people, I think, could connect with. In a way that was perhaps a little bit surprising and unexpected. And I know it was for the musicians who performed it. We felt the more that we got to know and the more into the music we became, the deeper we went into the music, the more compelling it became for us and the more important it became for us to perform this piece in the most authentic way possible.
Yeah. He did the recording, and that's what we just listened to, the Movement 3. And the proceeds from this recording of Mass for the Oppressed go to the Alaska Innocence Project. And that's just an amazing thing. And,
yes.
You know, I've hosted a whole afternoon concert with Emerson about the premiere of this recording. And you know, you can find that at KUAC.org on our FM site. And he has, you know, such profound insight about what it's like to go through and write a Mass, which he had never written before. And
right. You know, it was a big scale work
yeah.
for him, for sure, no question. And it was a labor of love, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so you conducted that last year, mm-hmm. and then he took it to
Notre Dame.
And was there a process that followed after you had done the premiere?
Yeah, so there was. So what happened was, Emerson hadn't written a piece this scale before. And so as we sort of went through it, we uncovered that there may be a few ways to tweak things just a little to express it a little bit more clearly. And so
from a conductor standpoint,
of course, yeah, from the performer standpoint, uh-huh. from the interpreter standpoint. And so he was very open, and I said to him, I said, you know, I'd be happy to sit down with you. So we did over the phone on August after the festival, and I just walked him through all of the places through the piece that, with a slight tweak this way or that, we, the musicians, would be able to express his intention even clearer, whether it be dynamics or the way it was written or whatever it was, right? Little things, yeah. Tiny little things. But those little details and those little things make a big difference. And so he was able to fix the parts, quote unquote, you know, alter the parts slightly. And that's what you hear in this recording, are the sort of edited parts after our premiere last summer.
And who knew behind good composers, good newer composers, mm-hmm. there's a conductor friend who cares mm-hmm. so much that will, you know, go back and say, from the standpoint of the orchestra, yep. this could work.
Yes, and it's not as unusual as you might think. For instance, here in residence, led by Andy Springer, we have a group at the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival called Corvus, which is the new music wing.
They were on Alaska Live last week.
Oh, awesome. Uh-huh. And so the Corvus folks have that same passion, connection, and attention to detail when they work with new composers, or new pieces by composers, not necessarily new composers, where they try to are bringing pieces to life maybe for the first time, and there will be interactions with the composer. Hey, you know, this note, what are you trying to express here? Let me see if I can help, or whatever the sort of the way of writing is. Now, that's not all composers, not all the time, but for sure, there is a part in all musicians' hearts to perform brand new music, and there's a part in our hearts to leave the music in a way that for generations to come, musicians can take this piece on and to perform it, you know. And so at some point, Emerson, myself, will all be gone, and this piece will live way outlive him, right? And so you want it to be as clear a statement of your intentions as possible, so that for generations to come, people can express themselves through this music with a clear understanding of the composer. Now, here's what's even more exciting. So, you know, we go through that process all the time. So Beethoven Symphony and Mahler Symphony, but Beethoven in particular, where there were no recordings. Right. Beethoven wasn't big on writing, you know, like writing about his experience about the music. So we got a little bit of that, but not a lot. So we sort of guess, we kind of put the pieces together and do sort of historical sleuthing and try to figure out how they... With Emerson, we'll have a recording that he conducted that we'll know exactly what it is his intention was, or assume we know what his intention was. There are recordings of Aaron Copland conducting his own piece.
That's
and
right.
Aaron Copland wasn't the best conductor in the world. He was a phenomenal composer, but not the best conductor. And so sometimes you think, oh, well, maybe he really meant this other tempo. But no, it was probably just that Aaron Copland wasn't doing a great job of conducting that day. I mean, dare I say that? I know it's very sacrilegious, and it's probably going to be a bolt of lightning hit me outdoors.
Watch
but that's,
out.
I know, right? But it's totally true, right? Like he just,
sure.
he and Stravinsky was the same way. Stravinsky and Copland were great composers. They were mediocre conductors, and they couldn't always express themselves with their hands. And that's why I think it's so important, not that composers don't conduct, I think that's all great, but that there really is a function for the interpreter, there's a function for the creator, there's a function for the performer. We all have very important roles into bringing something to life. And that's why the conversation between Emerson and I could be so interesting and so back and forth, is I would say to him, hey, listen, so what is your musical intention here? And he'd describe it. And I say, well, this, the way you wrote it, it doesn't ring for me that way, but what if this tweak happened? He's like, oh, well, that is what I intended. And I said, well, try that. And so
this is the conversation you never got to have with Beethoven, though.
Correct.
And you still have to, you know, figure out as a conductor
all of these things.
Yes, all of these
things. These
are
the same decisions we make with all music. Mm-hmm. People think, oh, you're doing new music, it's a different way to prepare it, but it's not. It's all exactly the same. It's all exactly the same. It's just that sometimes the composers are dead and you can't really call them up.
Right, but if
Seance, but...
Well, never know what you're going to get from that. Do you call upon conductors that you really love their work? Do you call upon them to, you know...
Occasionally, absolutely.
Yeah,
like, hey,
like your
what
mentors.
Do you think? You know, for... Yes, mentors, exactly. For instance, when I started conducting opera a number of years ago now, I went to a guy named David Efron.
Yes, you've been at the Met for a while.
What?
You've been
No. I'm like, I would love that.
Of?
That would be great if that was me, but no.
Oh, I'm thinking of Gregory Buchalter.
Right? Yeah, I think you are.
Okay.
But so, but when I first started, I thought, oh, I better go to somebody who conducts opera all the time and ask them how to do this. And so that's what I did. And, you know, you ask for advice. You ask, of course, we all do that. We do that with each other all the time, right? And now, of course, as I get a little older and a little grayer, I know, I've got a few gray hairs, now people start calling me from time to time. Look at that.
That's wonderful. How
but, you
nice
know, I don't stop calling other people.
Yeah,
trust me.
Right.
You never stop that. You know, it's never like, oh, I am the master and these are the students. It doesn't really work like that.
Right.
You have to keep learning. I mean, constantly. And that's the great thing about music, especially classical music for me, is that I feel like as deep an understanding as I have of classical music, I've just scratched the surface and I could go that much deeper and again and again and again. And I'm on this incredible journey of discovery, of not only discovery of music, but of self-discovery, right? And I was explaining this to a student just the other day in his lesson, and I said, you know, I find that the more vulnerable I allow myself to be, the more in depth I search, the more that I find, the more that I want to find, and the more vulnerable I can trust and allow myself to be. And I find that conducting has been an enormous window for me into how to live my life, and just how to think about life, right? Just this idea of, okay, well, maybe rather than making things happen, what if I allow things to happen, right? Now, that's not sort of like just sit there and something will drop in your lap and everything's going to be fine, because
right.
I still work my butt off. I can tell you that right now, right? I study and I work really hard. But I don't worry so much about how the next thing's going to happen as I used to. I just kind of allow it. It sort of unfolds as it's naturally meant to, as it naturally does. For all of us, by the way. That's how life works.
Yeah. We have as much control as, you know, we
zero.
Do.
Which is pretty close to zero. I mean, the thing you can control is yourself, right? You can control your preparedness. I remember my father when I was a kid, he used to... We would have discussions, and he would say, "Oh, listen, it's not what you know; it's who you know, right?" That was my dad from the '50s, right? Like, it's not what you know; it's who you know. Those are the people, and I kept saying, "No, Dad, it's what you know." And it turns out that he's right, and I'm right. You have to know people; you have to network, right? But you have to know something. And so if you network with people and you don't know something, you might get your foot in the door, but then the door will be slammed on it.
And they will forget about you, right, or they correct. Will ignore you. Yes.
Right. So it's really, it is as pure as I thought and as non-pure as he thought. We're both correct. Dad, if you're listening, we're both correct. We are both right. How about that?
Perfectly legit.
I've worked through something with you today, Lori. I feel much better.
Oh, Robert Franz is here working through composing and conducting and life.
Life, exactly. Life lessons, 101.
We have the grand. It's so grand. It has grand in the title.
So Malcolm Arnold is this enormously... hysterically English composer. And I say that because there's something about English composers that there's a sense of grandeur often and a sort of a cheeky sense of humor. And so, as you probably know...
Can I say on cue, there was drilling that just started.
Yes, I know, perfect, which is perfect
on cue,
for this
It has
piece.
Not been going no, at all during it, this whole session, but now on cue, there's drilling going on in the construction.
Really perfect because... he wrote this overture to be performed at the proms, you know, the Henry Woods proms,
yes.
Right? At big English sort of festival. And at those festivals, you know, they do sort of typical classical music, but things over the top too. I mean, like all sorts of things over the top. So he wrote this overture, grand overture, and it is for orchestra, fine, with organ, fine, for four vacuum cleaners and gunshot plus orchestra, vacuum cleaners. Yes. So it's actually technically three vacuum cleaners and a floor polisher,
I thought.
Yeah, it is technically that. But the problem is that if you don't have a... I mean, keeping a floor polisher under control is not so easy. So I have made the executive decision to turn it into four vacuum cleaners.
Okay.
And so there's a quartet of us who are going to be sitting out front in front of the orchestra. We each have a shop vac and a part. And it specifically says, turn vacuum on, turn vacuum off, but at different times. It's actually rhythmically, and it actually fits in with the music. It is crazy. It is like, it is wild, and it's hysterical. And we're performing that on Saturday night. And so the four vacuum soloists are myself. Now you're wondering, how will you conduct and play a vacuum? Is that what you were wondering, Lori?
Yes, I was.
So the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival Orchestra has an excellent assistant conductor named Jennifer Drake.
Oh, great.
Who just became the music director of the Boise Philharmonic Youth Orchestra. Very proud of her. She's the principal violist in the orchestra as well. She'll be conducting the piece. The four soloists are myself, Janelle Soler.
Oh.
I know, right? Janelle will be playing a
shop vac.
Yes. Therese Kaptur, the outgoing executive director of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, and taking the baton, James Menaker, the incoming executive director of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival.
Cleaning up for each other on their way out. That's exactly right.
So tomorrow, for the first time Friday, we will assemble the shop vacs. Oh, and Tori, our librarian, will be playing the part of Rifle Girl.
Uh-huh.
Now, we have...
what are you doing for that?
Well, So, the way the piece is written, you have to remember, this is early 20th century English humor, is that a hunter comes in and shoots dead each of the four vacuum cleaner players, and that's how the vacuums go off, right? Mm-hmm. So, we wanted to clean it up just a little, bring it into 2017. So, we have a Nerf gun that will be shot at each one of us, and upon the pelting of a Nerf bullet at the back of the head, the vacuum will be turned off and we will expire as vacuumists.
Yes.
So that is all the tomfoolery and craziness that you will experience Saturday night at Pioneer Park in the exhibition hall.
Yeah, when
we perform
o'clock.
For the first time perhaps in Fairbanks history, no one I've talked to has ever played this piece before.
The Grand Grand.
A Grand Grand Overture by the English composer Malcolm Arnold. So it, I thought it might be kind of fun as a way to sort of finish up our time today to finish with a little cleaning exercise.
It's perfect. We've got people with hard hats walking by the studio too. No lie. Oh, that was delightful. And the...
And not over the top at all, really.
It was a celebration.
Yes.
So that Malcolm Arnold piece is going to be played by the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival Orchestra.
Yes, Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Pioneer Park in the exhibition hall.
And that's the overture that starts the whole show.
No, it's the end of Act 1, but yes, it's sort of the end of, it's right before the
intermission.
It's
the finale of Act 1, gotcha.
It is, and so it's going to be conducted by the assistant conductor of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival Orchestra, Jennifer Drake, and it's going to, the solo vacuums will be Therese Kaptur, outgoing executive director of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, James Maneker, incoming executive director of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, Janelle Soler, singer extraordinaire, and myself playing vacuum one. I will be the first vacuumist for this. Oh, and
Chair
Tori.
One.
Yes, exactly. Tori, our librarian, will be the Nerf gun shot person.
It's not often that you say your first chair shot vac.
Not often. Although I do use my shop vac a lot at home, and I find that I am really good at the different attachments that go with it. And, you know, very, I think I have a lot of different colors and sounds that I can get out of my shop vac. In fact, my shop vac at home has a little whistle in it now because I sucked up a rusty nail into it and put a hole in the hose.
Yeah.
And
duct
I'm too
tape.
Cheap to go, right? Exactly. I need a little duct tape. I'm too cheap to go out and get another one.
So, just a couple months ago,
I
Fred
trained for
Child,
this, by the way, Lori. Yeah. Just so you know, I do have 2 degrees in this, and I am
trained for.
I am trained.
Fred Child shared that piece on Performance Today just a couple months ago, and the setup for it was so delightful. You know, he was talking about, just like you, talking about how the shop backs one by one come on, and they, you know, go out one by one with the shots. And so he did this whole setup, and it was, and he announced, you know, this is the grand for orchestra and 3 vacuums and a floor polisher. And then off goes the orchestra playing the grand overture. And then at the end, I don't know if he was really explaining too much, but maybe, you know, back announce. And after that, I got a phone call, and the woman on the phone, the listener on the phone was like, "You can hear the drilling. You can hear the drills." And I said, "Oh, what? Excuse me?" And she said, "No, you can tell them that you can hear the drills. It's coming through in the music." Mm-hmm. And I said, "What?" No. "Oh," I said, "Oh, were we just listening to Performance Today together?" And yeah. She said, "I don't know." And I said, "They just did a piece that involved vacuum cleaners and shop vacs." And she's like, "What? Really?" And I said, "Yes, I'm pretty sure that that was the sound of the drills that you just heard." And when you were doing the setup, Meister Franz, for this, I heard a little bit of drills going off in the background
in the
here
distance, yeah.
Because Fine Arts Center has some deconstruction, reconstruction going on with the Great Hall redo. So
that's
it's just kind of perfect. And
well, it was nice for her to call in and really, so at least she was listening.
She was.
Very attentively.
And I loved it that if she would have gotten a hold of anybody else here at KUAC, they may not have known because
right.
They may not have, you know, been yeah. attentively listening yes. to the setup to the, yeah. you know, program that day. And so I knew exactly. And we both laughed at this, mm-hmm. you know, that we had heard the vacuums and she had thought that the drills were just right on the other side of the
That's
wall
hysterical.
Here at KUAC.
That really was said, funny.
No, it was really part. That was in the score of that song.
I will tell you this.
Piece.
It is not a normal occurrence to have a piece for orchestra and 4 vacuums. And for most of the musicians in the orchestra, this is their first time, you know, cleaning up a piece like this.
It has been such a pleasure, Maestro Robert Franz, to have you here again from the Fairbanks Summer Arts
Thank
Festival.
You.
We'll see you tonight at the Westmark Gold
yep.
Room and on Saturday at Pioneer Park.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Afternoon Concert right here on Public Radio for Alaska, KUAC 89.9 FM, Fairbanks. I've been your host. I'm Lori Neufeld, co-hosting with me today, Robert Franz.